This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And, we're delighted and honored to have former Attorney General Ramsey Clark in the studio with us. Welcome to Flashpoints. We have spoken to you before, Ramsey, over the years in various parts of the globe. You're going to be in. You're here to talk about limits of power, this power which you have spent a lifetime challenging. First, you were enforcer at the Attorney General, and then you somehow, maybe you didn't change much, but you became the people's defense. So, you know, there's a lot to talk about in terms of limits of power, but let me ask the question this way. In terms of government power and citizens' rights, compared to, say, 20 years ago, where are we? Do we have more rights? Are we safer? Are we not safer in terms of the guarantees that were supposedly given under the Constitution amendments?
Well, I'll ignore your 20-year limitation.
Okay, please do. Feel free to do whatever
that,
you want.
I think there's been a significant erosion in government respect for fundamental human rights of our own citizens and certainly of people abroad since the idealism of the 60s. I don't think we've maintained the respect for individual rights and or human dignity that we were somehow or other inspired with. The Vietnam War took a lot of that out of us, but I think concentration of capital has done more to hurt individual liberties than anything else.
Really?
Yeah.
The sort of the emerging corporate state and corporate power. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, it's not concerned with individual rights. I mean, if you look at the prison population, it's just heartbreaking and staggering. And there's not a better barometer of how much you believe in freedom, is there, than how many people you're putting in prison. You ought to find a better way to treat your folks. And if you look at the discrimination in it, I mean, the numbers and the percentage of the young black male that are in prison and whose lives are severely damaged is just unbelievable and staggering and a shame. It's a shame for the nation that we would ever permit that. And that's after the civil rights movement, so to speak, you know. So you get to vote, but until you go to prison, then you can't vote anymore because you've been convicted of a felony.
A lot of discussion now about the drone program. We have admissions from the highest levels of government. The President of the United States has really collaborated in a wide-ranging program of assassinations in the context of national law, international law. How would you characterize that?
Right? Murder, simple, and ought to be addressed as such. The drones themselves are murder. I mean, you're going into neutral countries, you're going into areas far, far removed from war zones, you're missing the people you're trying to hit a lot of times, and you're hitting a lot of people you had no intention of hitting, but they just got in the way, and it doesn't even seem to bother you. But just the technique, where what happens to an Earth where there's no safety any place from something in the sky that you can't see, that it kills you.
We did a lot of programming over the last two invasions of the Gaza Strip. Even though the first one was more bloody and brutal, the Iron Fist in 2008-2009, this last one was a drone war. So when you were speaking with people, there were drones everywhere. People were terrified. Just about every human being in the Gaza Strip was vulnerable. Where are we in terms of sort of warfare and the power of the rich and the elite to control the rest by any means necessary, which seems to be more and more intense weaponry.
I'll tell you, the plight of Gaza, not to mention Palestine generally, is just desperate. I represented the PLO for about 30 years until Arafat left, and he only left Gaza about 2 years before he died, and so I'd visit him there regularly. And the place was booming. They were producing three crops, and it was green everywhere, three crops a year, building an airport virtually finished, ready for international transportation, education booming. I don't know of a place that was so intense on education from grammar school through graduate schools, and spirited. And now, I was there in January, and oh my God, it's just awful. I mean, you're at risk at all times, it seems like. There's no security anyplace. And even agriculture is barren. The hospitals are in terrible shape, lack medicines, and got a lot of injured people as well as sick people. It's a desperate situation and getting worse.
Is it an overstatement to say, to call it an ethnic cleansing in process? Clearly, there's a methodical attempt to purge Palestinians from their land. If you live in the West Bank, you can't even get to the Gaza Strip to see your uncle on a holiday or the weekend.
Well, I've done that a couple of times. It's a day's trip. You can get there, but
it's a few miles. And
if you're trying to meet somebody, I went into Gaza and wanted to meet some people and didn't have time to go over the West Bank, so they were trying to come over and get me. They got there about 15 minutes before I was there, 24 hours, and they got there about 15 minutes before I left.
That's how hard it is.
Right.
There's so much to say about that, so much I'd like to talk to you about. I want to tell people, though, that you will be tonight at Zaytuna College for people listening and living in the Bay Area. You're going to be at the new campus. That's 2401 LeConte Avenue in Berkeley. It's the event with Ramsey Clark in conversation, 6:30 to 8:30. It was just the 40th anniversary of the founding of the American Indian Movement. They were regathered. We spoke with Bill Means he was there on the reservation, and they were remembering and thinking about what still needs to happen. You've represented Leonard Peltier. He's still in jail.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on why the U.S. government will not let him out and the significance of his role in this new movement? I mean, you've worked closely with them.
You know, I argued his first parole release, and it's been decades ago now. And the poor hearing examiner ordered release and lost his job because of it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One day when I was a deputy attorney general in about 65, I was walking across a prison yard, and I saw an old guy. It was in Texas, hot as blazes, white hair, slumped over against a building. And the warden was with me. I walked over and said, "Hey, buddy, what are you doing out here?" No response. So I bend over and pat him on the back and look up, senile. I turn to the warden and say, "What is this man doing here? His son can kill him." He said, "Yeah, we've been trying to get rid of him for years. Every time we say, can't we release him? We get a letter back, this is in the 60s, from J. Edgar Hoover, and he says, anyone who ever is convicted of killing an FBI agent will never leave prison." And I think that's basically Leonard Peltier's problem.
And of course,
he was wrongfully convicted,
right.
but were FBI agents, two killed.
Two killed, and so they're never going to let him go.
That's as long as
that's
the present
like.
Power prevails.
Amazing figure in...
I'm more of an optimist than that, but it's been, he should have been in the first place, but it's been so desperately overdone.
Well, let me, just have a couple of minutes left, and I would love to sort of open the mic to you and ask you, What are some of the things on your mind? What do you think are some of the issues, as they say, that we really need to do something about? Your thoughts on that?
Well, you're asking for a long list.
Well, we got a few minutes. Talk to us.
Well, I'd have to start with our wars. We've got to stop these wars. I mean, we've just had one outrageous, murderous war after another, and we're aiming for Iran now, which you could call the last man standing, but it's not the last. There'll be more after that. If you look at the toll of those wars and the sheer idiocy of them, look what we've done to Iraq. My God, since 1991, those people have not had a moment of peace. They've been at risk of death at every moment all that time, and it's as bad now or worse than it's ever been. After Bush's invasion in 03, the place is, I don't see how the people have stood it, but somehow or other, as we've been told, mankind is a creature that can become accustomed to anything, and they've become accustomed to hell on earth. And it's our responsibility. We have to stop it, and we have to prevent it from happening further, and we can't do that until we demilitarize.
And is that possible? I mean, where do we go? What's the advice now?
Oh, it's not impossible. We'd be so much better off. I mean, think of all the things we could do with the money if that was the only benefit we got from it. But we're risking finally a nuclear war because we've violated the Non-Proliferation Treaty since we signed it in 1968, Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which compelled the nuclear powers to work toward, and there were only five or six at the time that were acknowledged, to work to eliminate their own nuclear weapons in return for the other nations not acquiring nuclear weapons. But instead it's grown. And today, if you've got an enemy with a nuclear weapon, you better get one yourself. You've got no other protection, really, because you can't fight with them. They'll take out your cities. Doesn't matter how much bigger you are than they. That's the plight that Iran's faced with. How do you protect your people if Israel's got the bomb?
Well, and I mean, we're way past 1984, but every time I hear the notion that Israel is restraining itself, Israel, the nuclear renegade, I don't know, do they have 500 thermonuclear weapons or more? Nobody knows because they're renegades. And they're restraining themselves from not bombing Iran. I mean, if that isn't Orwellian, and that is the story that is carried near and wide by the mainstream, NPR included, all the liberal CNBC stations, they don't touch this. How do we confront that?
Well, we just have to, stand up and do our best. And speak out for what it is. If Iran's, I started going there while the Shah was still there, and then I watched what they did in the Iran-Iraq War. They lost 800,000 kids because they'd take a rifle, and they'd have on tennis shoes and a pair of pants, and they'd charge toward artillery and aircraft and of Soviet Union and the U.S. and all the other powers of the earth backing Iraq in that war. They lost 800,000 young men, and they kept fighting. And they won. I mean, they finally prevailed in spite of everything. The problem they have is, however courageous they are, if an enemy uses nuclear weapons against them, their cities are gone.
Ramsey Clark, I want to thank you for coming in.
Oh, great to be
really,
here. Thank you so
really.
Much.
Really, what an honor.
Thanks for your program and voice here.
Thank you. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short musical break, and we're going to come back and talk about why these thousands of Israel First citizen lobbyists are descending on Capitol Hill. Yep, that's where they are. Stay tuned. listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, as you know by now, a whole bunch of Israel First citizen lobbyists descended on Capitol Hill. I guess they were not all that concerned about sequestration. They were concerned about funds for Israel. And it's an interesting thing to think about in these hard times. And joining us to help think about it is Josh Rubner. He is the National Advocacy Director of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. And we're very interested in that as well. Well, Josh, you've been thinking a lot about this. And, well, explain to us, remind people what Israel First is, and then say something about what they're doing there in Washington.
Israel First, I would say, is sort of an attitude or a mindset that some Americans have, that Israel's interests should be privileged above the United States. And that's the exact type of mindset that was brought to bear on Capitol Hill earlier this week on Tuesday, when AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee,